We're back on In Focus News Radio KMAN. Brandon Peoples and Dave Lewis with Riley County Police Department Director Dennis Butler. And I'm going to talk here about kind of an interesting story this past week in the sports world. And Dave, you can join us here if you want to share your perspective here.
I have nothing to add.
Well, you know, it is kind of a newsy topic because it did involve almost a crime that happened in Lawrence this past week at the KUK State game. First of all, your initial reaction, Mr. Butler, when you saw that from a law enforcement perspective of just how chaotic that was.
My mouth fell open when I saw a player with a stool held overhead threatening to hit someone. I don't know who he was threatening with it, but I've seen a lot of in-game, end-of-game, pre-game pushing, shoving, mouthing. Never seen that. That was, again, I was pretty flabbergasted. I think Dave used that word. That's the word I've been using, mm-hmm. telling people. For his sake, he's very fortunate he chose not to hit somebody with that, because there would have been other repercussions, I believe, legally, had he done that. And not to mention the fact that somebody could have been seriously hurt. Very, very disappointing to see that.
And, you know, that kind of makes people kind of wonder, well, when there is a rematch coming up here at the end of February, February 29th, in fact. That's the next Sunflower Showdown here in Manhattan. And I don't know who's going to be involved in that game, if even Silvio De Souza will be playing at that point here. But it makes you wonder, well, there's always fear that this could happen again with a rematch between the same two teams. I'm assuming there will be extra security at Bramlage Coliseum that day.
Well, that's a call that K-State has to make, and if they ask or request additional assistance from us, we will certainly do our best to accommodate those needs. I would hope that after what happened, everybody will be well aware of the implication if there's a repeat. And so we're going to plan for the worst, hope for the best. That's what we do in policing often. In terms of, you had asked me off air about Aggieville. I haven't been down in Aggieville during games when the game crowd shows up. I don't know how many KU fans are there during the game. I would guess that it would be a rather small number, but I don't know. So I don't anticipate there being problems down there necessarily. Other than that, it was supposed to be the traditional fake Paddy's Day, so you may have other people there for that reason that could cause some problems. But we'll be in contact and communication with K-State Police, and we'll help them as much as they need.
De Souza will not be eligible to play yet for that game. He's only got like one game of the regular schedule after his 12-game suspension. And I think, Director Butler, you talked about fake Paddy's Day briefly. There's a lot of people that believe that is going to be on February 29th, even though Aggieville folks are saying that it's, the 21st? Something like that. It's the Saturday after spring break.
Yes. According to the Aggieville Business Association and a few of the businesses down there who are advertising Fake Paddy's Day, it has been moved to March 21st. It is not going to be on the traditional, you know, just before spring break day. This year would be February 29th.
Okay. I have another thing, and I didn't hear about this until I saw pictures of them. This is going off topic a little bit. But RCPD teamed up with the Midwest Dream Car Collection Museum here last week or just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And you had some police vehicles on display in the museum.
Yeah, they called it Cops and Cars.
How'd that work out for you?
It was cool. I stopped by, and we had one of our patrol cars in the museum, but we also had our armored vehicle, the Bearcat, and we had them on display. It was a very cold day, and there was snow and ice on the ground from a storm the day before. I was curious to see if anybody would show up, and we had a great turnout. A lot of kids were there, a lot of adults, and the Midwest Car Museum staff couldn't have been more hospitable. They loved having us there. We loved being inside on a cold winter day and letting people come in and ask questions about those vehicles and letting us have just another opportunity, which we like to do, to explain how they're used and how it helps us keep our officers safe and carry out our missions in very dangerous situations. But it was fantastic. I told them at the end of the event, I hope you invite us back. We would love to come back and do this again.
Did the Bearcat get us as much attention as a Ferrari or any other vehicle out there?
When I arrived, I got there about 15 minutes late. There was a big crowd around the Bearcat, and it's not something you see every day. And again, it's really nice that we can let people get inside of it. And we also have a description of the vehicle. Like, you know, on the cars that are on display, it has a provenance mm-hmm. on the vehicle. Well, we did that for the Bearcat, too. So it tells you, you know, how big the engine is, how much it weighs, what it's used for. And we have that on a magnetic applique that we put on the side of, because it's armored, so you can stick it on anywhere. And that way, when people want to know something, but the officers are talking to others, they can stand there and read all about it and then ask more questions.
I think one of the neat things over at the KHP Training Center over in Salina, they've got some old patrol cars there. And it's neat to see those.
It is. I go to a conference every year. It's the International Association of Chiefs of Police Conference. And I'm not sure who owns these vehicles, but just about everywhere we go, and there's very few cities that can host it because it's such a large conference, somebody always has period police cars that have been restored with the bubble red light on top and, you know, a bench seat with, you know, a radio and maybe a spotlight. And that's it. That's all that's in those cars. But it's really cool to see.
Yeah, that is pretty neat. And with the Bearcat, I know you like having that out in the public for people to maybe get a little more comfortable with it, because people see that and they have a misconception here of what that vehicle is intended for here, I think, sometimes.
You know, I'm not going to say that there haven't been instances across the country where it was used in a way that we would not use it here. But that's why I want people to come up and see it firsthand, touch it, get inside it, and ask our officers, how do you use this? And I'll take every opportunity to say it's not an offensive weapon. It is designed, because it has armor, to protect our officers in situations in which they are at risk of being hurt by somebody who wants to do them harm. An example, without getting into any details, was when we had to execute a search warrant at an apartment looking for somebody wanted for murder. The rear of the building had no cover for the officers to stand behind in case he came out the back door. So we pulled the Bearcat up and right behind the apartment, and they were behind it and inside it in case he came out, and they had cover to protect themselves. That was it. That's what it was used for, and it worked very well.
Mm. Wow. Well, and it's a good tool to have here for any police department. And, you know, traditionally here we see, you know, there's stuff, the ambulance events here for the breadbasket, or I know we K-Man here last summer did a Stuff the Bus event here for USD 383. Any thoughts about maybe doing some sort of charitable thing with the Bearcat? Would that be something you could do with the Bearcat, or maybe another police vehicle?
Well, you just gave me a good idea, Brandon, so I'm going to go back and talk to my staff. But one thing I do want to point out is, and this is not a knock on the museum at all, but when they first invited us, they had asked us about displaying the vehicles. And we learned during these discussions that they charge admission to these events. And I said, well, I don't think we can participate because these vehicles are funded by your tax dollars. I don't think it's right to charge people to come in and see it. And I said, we'd love to come, but I can't do that if you're going to charge admission. And it wasn't a contentious conversation at all. And they immediately recognized that concern of mine. And then it was a free event. So people could come in and not only see our vehicles, they could see the whole museum that day at no cost. So I thought that was pretty cool that they did that.
Very cool. And I know there's been a big push here for you to have more community outreach. Where's the fundraising at for the barbecue thing?
Right now, we stand at a little over $11,000, so we've done better than I thought we would at this point. We have some funding in our seized assets, and we've set a limit on not using any more than $10,000 in budgeted funding. So we have until about the middle to the end of February to make a decision on moving forward with this. We're still trying to raise private funding for this. I think that's better. I'm very happy with what we've received so far, more than I thought we would. But the more public support we can get for this grill and smoker that's used for public relation events, the better. So that's what we're hoping for.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great concept, and boy, having that at, you know, events like Juneteenth in the summer, or really any time when it's warm, maybe not so much in January, but yeah, who knows, maybe there's opportunities.
If I could add one more thing, if anybody in the community is interested in supporting this, the funding mechanism is through the Greater Manhattan Community Foundation. So if they go on their website, they'll find where they can make a contribution.
All right, very good. Well, let's take a break. We'll come back and wrap up our conversation today here with RCPD Director Dennis Butler on In Focus.